पार्थिमर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। सो नाउ वी डिस्कस अबाउट द दान, दातव्यमिति यद्दानम् दीयते अनुपकारिणे देशे काले च पात्रे च तद्दानं सात्विकं स्मृतम्। सो दातव्यम् इति यद्दानम्, सो अर्लियर इट वाज यष्टव्यम् इति ये मना, दैट बिकॉज इट इज टू बी डन। सो दातव्यम् मीन्स इट इज टू बी गिवन, वर्थ गिविंग। दीयते अनुपकारिणे, अनुपकारिणे मीन्स वन डजंट, समटाइम्स वी डू सम गुड टू अदर्स एंड वी रिमाइंड देम, मैंने तुम्हारे लिए ये किया था, याद है तुम्हें? सो यू नो दैट इज द आइडिया दैट बेसिकली वॉट एवर वी डू फॉर अदर्स वी आर यूजिंग दैट एज अ चिप फॉर इमोशनली मैनिपुलेटिंग एंड कंट्रोलिंग अदर्स। देशे काले च पात्रे च, इफ यू डू समथिंग फॉर अदर्स, यस इट इज नेचुरल फॉर अस टू एक्सपेक्ट सम रेसिप्रोकेशन, बट कॉन्स्टेंटली रिमाइंडिंग दैट इज अ वे ऑफ एक्चुअली एलिनेटिंग अदर्स, it doesn't really lead to any deepening of the relationship. Taddanam satvikam smritam, so that is dan which is the sattva guna. Then he'll describe yattu pratyupkarartham karartham phalam uddishya va punaha diyate cha parikshtam taddanam rajasam smritam. So when one does with pratyupkarartham, okay, I have done, you should do this for me, and one should accept some phala from that. And when one feels that there is no pratyupkar coming, there will be no phal coming, then there is pariklishtam. One feels, hey, there's so much trouble in giving this. What is the reason why I should give this? I don't want to give this. But somehow, one feels either pressurized, or because of social prestige, or because of some other factors, because of one has to give. So such is in the mode of passion. Taddanam rajasam smritam. And I'll discuss all three together a little bit more. Adesha kale yaddanam apatre bhyascha diyate asatkritam avagyatam tattamasam udaritam. So without any consideration of time, place or a worthiness of the candidate, asatkritam avagyatam. So when one gives without respect to the person also, that is tamasam. So if a drunkard is at a bar and then there is a beggar outside the bar, and that beggar says, the drunkard says, you know, tu bhi kya yaad rakhega, here lay a bottle. And he gives charity to him. So yeah, this is what? This is tamasic charity. The whole idea of charity is misdirected in such a way that one is giving something harmful and thinking that one is doing something helpful. So, now, the Bhagavad Gita, if you see earlier, it talked in 12.11 about giving charity for a good cause. So, the Gita's position is not that all charity is bad, but it is also that we have to use our intelligence while giving charity. And the purpose of charity is to, from our perspective, it is to create a culture of selflessness. We are all self-centered. So, by giving charity, we create a culture of selflessness within us. Some people say that when they say that actually I know, you know, I want to give charity, you know, what to speak of 50%, I want to give more than 50%, but when I earn this much money, when my salary becomes this much, then I will give 55%, but till then don't even ask me for 5%. So what happens is, so now whether the people will actually give 55% later, we don't know. And even if they give 55%, the point is not that, it is not just that charity is an act that should be done. Actually, charity is a habit that should be cultivated. Because it's a disposition of the mind that has to be made. That whatever I earn, you know, a part of it is to go to Krishna. Actually, all of it is given by Krishna only to me. A part of it should go to Him. So, when people reserve charity for special occasions, when they give big charity, that is good. But then by that, they don't necessarily create the culture of charity. So, charity is meant to, yes, it's not just an act to be done, but a habit to be cultivated. Just like with respect to other activities of devotional activity, we don't just remember Krishna when we go to dhams or on festival days. We may do it regularly. So same way with respect to charity. So within us, it should create a culture of selflessness. And like all other devotional activities, this also should be done regularly. So how much percentage a person can give, that will vary according to time, place, circumstance. Now everybody may not be able to give the same percentage. Depending on that is okay according to time, place, circumstance. But the important point is that it's a habit to be cultivated. And the atavyam, that yes, this is what I should give. And in general, when people give charity, what it does is, generally speaking, we are always concerned with our problems, our desires, our ambitions. And we want to use all the resources we have to fulfill our things. But when we give charity, what happens? It expands our circle. It makes us think of things beyond ourselves. And that's why it's also good, you know, not just to give charity. Charity is one aspect of it. But the whole purpose of Krishna consciousness is to expand our consciousness. So charity is one way by which we expand our consciousness beyond our own concerns. To things beyond our concerns means the things which are Krishna's concerns, we take that up for ourselves. So now, although Krishna has talked about charity in the three modes, the important point also is that he has talked charity as one of the defining characteristics of faith. Among the four, ahar, tapa, yajna and dana. So it is quite an important characteristic. That means if you want to understand the religious inclination, religious level of a person, these are four character things we can look at. Okay, what kind of food that a person eats? Then we can look at, okay, what are the religious activities that he is doing? What are the yajna basically doesn't necessarily have to refer to fire sacrifices, but what are the ways by which the person is connecting with God? Then tapa refers to what kind of fast does the person perform, what kind of austerity does the person do. Every religion talks something about this. And then what is the way the person gives charity? So these are general principles. For Muslims also there are five principles which are considered fundamental. So one of them is they should offer namaz every day. Then they should give charity to the poor. Then they should go to Mecca, Medina pilgrimage at least once. Then they should fast on Ramadan. And then they should accept Allah as the one and only God. That is the first one. So if you see, the basic principle of Yajna, Dana, Tapa is there in this. There the Yajna may not be fire sacrifice, but they are expected to offer prayers five times a day. Then they are expected to give charity to poor. Then they are fasting on Ramadan. And then going to the whole austerity of Tirtha Yatra. The principles are similar. The same way, within Christianity also, they have their rituals, which basically involve some Yajna, Dana, Tapa. And Christians, they have the tradition of giving tithe, they call it. Generally, the members of the Catholic Church, they give 1/10 of their salary as of their earnings as charity. That's what they're expected to give. It's called tithing. And then similarly, they also have their fasts, especially on certain days. They have a festival called Lent when they have fasts. So there are various occasions when they also do fast, they give charity. And they also have their ways when they go for mass and they have their prayers. So yajna is a broad way of we connect with God. So, in general, yajna, dana, tapa. These are very important activities. Yajna, in a sense, connects us with God, connects us with people, at a deeper, more selfless level. We are connected with people in aham and mama modes, you know. Okay, who are the people who can do something for me? And tapa, it connects us with our soul beyond our body and mind. When I do austerity, then if I am to sustain myself in austerity, I have to think of something higher. You know, I have to go beyond. Yes, The body is there, but there's some higher purpose beyond bodily needs. So that is how it connects us with the deeper aspects of life. And that's how we move forward. So yajna dana tapa are important principles. So Krishna will tell about all these three. Yes? How does Brahmachari do dana? Well, by receiving dana. No, I'm just joking. Actually, the Brahmachari is expected to jnana dana. That's a very important service, giving knowledge. Actually, that is the duty of sannyasi, and Brahmachari is expected to assist sannyasis. So, the way Prabhupada Institute is gone, you know, Bhaktivedanta Swami Thakur had generally sannyasis wearing saffron and Brahmacharis wearing white. So, Prabhupada had Brahmacharis also wearing saffron. So, because Brahmacharis also to some extent perform the duties that are expected of sannyasis. So, sharing knowledge with others. That's how we also give dana. Yes. But when I said the first point about receiving dan, the point is not just to receive dan, but the point is that the dan that is given by the people to Krishna, that has to be received and that has to be utilized in the Lord's service. So dan cannot be just given in a vacuum. So that reciprocation has to be there. So being a connection for people with God, that's also an aspect of the Brahmachari's role in dan. Brahmacharis or sannyasis, those are in the renounced order. Yes? Can I question? Okay. So it is said that when we give charity, there should be some pinch when we give the charity. Then how is that different from pariklishtam? You know, that one feels the pain. See, pariklishtam basically refers to, if you look at the context of Rajoguna charity, one doesn't want to give the charity, but one is forced to give the charity. You know, because some relative is forcing, or some family member is forcing, or some boss is forcing. So others are forcing, and because social circumstances we can't oppose, we can't resist, so we give. That is pariklishtam. Whereas when you talk about charity giving, to the extent that it pinches, that means that is more referring to the amount of the charity, and giving it to the right cause, with the right motive, but the quantity should be such that there is a little bit of hurt for it. And in a sense, it's in the same way. You know, with respect to everything else that we do in life, it's yukta, but always we should be trying to do more. Now, for example, how much do we sleep? Whatever our body needs, but we are always trying to do more and more service for Krishna. So within the limits of our body, same way, the idea is that we just want to increase our service to Krishna. So charity is one way we increase our service to Krishna. So, now Krishna will talk about the concept of Om Tat Sat. So this, yes? Basically, that in as you said, lunar eclipse, solar eclipse, charity, in 20? 17.20, yeah. So now the point is, that should it be that it is given at particular times? See, the idea is that there are certain times which are considered auspicious for giving charity. So, now the eclipses are considered times when the effect of evil on good, or rather evil is temporarily triumphing over evil. Good. That's how the sun or the moon, they get covered. So now geographically or cosmologically there might be certain causes, but we know Rahu and Ketu are also invisible planets which cover, whose position, orbital position is such that they also come at the position where sun and moon and earth are coming in one line. So this represents that now the Rahu and Ketu are demons, and sun and moon are the gods. So this indicates that temporarily the power of evil is triumphing over the power of good. And that's why at that time, you know, because that power of evil is sort of spreading all over the universe, so at that time, our interaction with material things we minimize. That's why we often don't eat food at that time. And we can chant the holy names. See, there within our Bhakti Marg also, there is the Pancharatri Ki Vidhi and there is the Bhagavat Vidhi. So Pancharatri Ki Vidhi requires cleanliness. So that's why even deity worship is not done so much at that time. no, that is stopped. Not because the deities are affected, but because we are affected. Because we are contaminated by the uncleanness. But we do Bhagavat with hearing and chanting. And similarly, one aspect of minimizing our contact with material things is giving up those material things. So that's why those are, that time is considered inauspicious for ourselves using material things for enjoyment. But that is considered auspicious for giving material things away. Clear? So now let's move. Krishna will talk about, okay, these are all sacrifices which are done in the three modes. Now, whatever sacrifice a person is doing, how can we transcend? How can we come to a spiritual consciousness within those sacrifices? Okay, is it an end of, what does end of month mean? How is it considered auspicious? See, basically, there is the lunar calendar and solar calendar. So, the end of month is not just geographically March 31st or April 1st. Basically, when the sun comes, goes through a circle, Amavasya or Purnima, you know, that is a time of transition. So, like from the waxing phase, it is moving to the waning phase. Or from the waning phase, it is moving to the waxing phase. So, these are times which are of times of transition. So, times of transition are considered to be auspicious. Because, say, from the waning phase, the moon is now moving to the waxing phase. So that means the auspicious influence of the moon is increasing. So in that sense, the starting of the month is also considered auspicious. There are, of course, in the karma kanda. Now if you see in Ekadashi, there are Ekadashi Mahatmya, there are stories described for each Ekadashi. So these are often stories which are largely talked about in karma kanda context. As devotees, we can read the stories, no problem. But we don't have to emphasize those stories. So there may be specific rituals because of which certain times are important, and if those rituals are based on Vishnu worship, devotees can also adopt them. So Prabhupada is talking here about, as he said, this chapter is not directly talking about bhakti. There is no direct reference to maam till now, directly in the Bhagavad Gita, in this chapter. So that it is talking about those people whose following of dharma is not exactly according to scripture, but they are doing some dharma. It may be sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. So from that point of view, auspicious and inauspicious is also important. Because it's not transcendental here. Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho. Brahmanas Trividha Smritaha. Brahmanas Tena Vedascha. Yajnascha Vihita Pura. So Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho. That the absolute truth, Nirdesho means it is known, it is pointed out by these three words. Brahmanas, now here, the word Brahmanas and Brahmanas, two words are coming over here. And the two are different. So the Brahmana is known thus by various people. So among them is Brahmanas. So Brahmanas tena vedascha yajnascha vihita pura. That means that the Brahman is addressed to or invoked or referred to by the three words Om Tat Sat. And these three words are used by the Brahmanas. So Brahman refers to the absolute truth Brahman. Brahmanas refer to the priests who are chanting the Vedic rituals, who are chanting the Vedic mantras and doing the Vedic rituals. So they refer to the absolute truth by the word Brahman, by the words Om Tat Sat. So Brahmanas tena Vedas, Vedascha Yajnascha Vihitaha Pura. Pura means in the past times. During the Yajna, these were the three names which are used to address the absolute truth. So Krishna starts this section by basically telling that Om Tat Sat is a means to invoke the absolute truth, to refer to the absolute truth. And the whole idea is, the connection of the previous section is that okay, different people are doing the worship in different conceptions. But now, how can they spiritualize their conceptions? So by connecting with the absolute truth. So after describing this Om Tat Sat as a means of invoking the absolute truth, then he will explain the meanings of Om, the context in which Om Tat Sat, these words are used. Tasmado mityu darutya yagyadana tapakriyaha pravartante vidhanoktaha satatam brahmavadinam. So, Brahmavadinam. So this is the only place where the word Brahmavadi comes in the Bhagavad Gita. There's no Mayavadi in the Bhagavad Gita directly. But here Brahmavadi is a very generic word. It is not referring to... See, words have different meanings. And we have to always look at the context to understand what is the meaning that is being talked about. Like Bhagavan, it can have a technical meaning as the person who has six opulences. But Bhagavan Narada or Bhagavan Vyas can also come like that. So then we have to see at the context. So here the word Brahmavadi doesn't necessarily refer to the impersonalist who is contrasted with Mayavadi. Here the word Brahmavadi refers to general person who is following the Vedic culture. So Vedic culture has Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. So the next verse will talk about Moksha Kangshi Bhi. So this is talking about any person who is following the broad Vedic culture, which tells you, helps people to progress through these four series of Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. So what is Krishna telling in this verse? Tasmad Om Ityudaritya. So these three words were used to refer to the absolute truth. So among them, Om Ityudaritya. So it's referred to by Om. So whenever Yagyadana Tapakriya, this Yagyadana Tapa are performed, at that time, this Vidhanoktaha, so they chant the Om Mantra, and according to scriptural regulation, Vidhanoktaha, Satatam Brahmavadinaha. So those who are following the broad Vedic culture with the eventual goal of attaining the Supreme, so they, whenever the Yagyadana Tapa Karma, they chant that letter Om, chant the sound Om. Now after describing this, Krishna will describe about how. Yeah.
People above them also.
Everyone.
Like
the transcendentalists can also chant.
Jnani yogis and all, they also.
So Brahmavadi here refers to everyone who is, they may be aspiring for moksha in the long run, or by the gradual way or the rapid way. So it's generally referring to everyone in general. All those people in the Vedic fold, they chant Om.
Prithi, we find that some of the Prabhupada's disciples who are especially in the preaching in the bridging phases, they write Om Tat Sat. So is it only to attract people or?
Sometimes some devotee writers and preachers, they use Om Tat Sat. Is it for bridging purposes? Not necessarily. Prabhupada also, I think, concludes his Bhagavatam introduction itself with Om Tat Sat.
Yeah.
So no, as devotees, it is not that we have to necessarily use Hare Krishna everywhere. Hare Krishna is one way of referring to the absolute truth. Om Tat Sat is another way. So just as we can use, see, we will use the word Krishna, but other places we will use the word God also. Now where, especially we are talking with people who are going to accept Krishna as God, ready to accept, then we can use the word Krishna, but otherwise we will use the word God. Similarly, Om Tat Sat is a more generic way of referring to the absolute truth, invoking the absolute truth. So we can use that also if the occasion is what occasion requires that. Taditya Bhisandhaya Phalam Yagya Tapa Kriya Dana Kriyascha Vividha Kriyante Moksha Kangshi Bhi. So tad itya abhisandhaya. So by referring the word tata, tad it is anabhisandhaya, it is not abhisandhaya. Tad itya anabhisandhaya. So anabhisandhaya means abhisandhaya is with attached with desires, anabhisandhaya is without desires. Phalam yagya tapa kriya. So the difference which I was making out is in the previous verse, when his Om is being chanted, there is no reference to not being attached to the fruits of the work. Whereas when Krishna is using the word Sat, it is chanted with respect to Phalam Yagya. So Yagya Tapakriya was there in both verses. Yagya Dan Tapakriya, those three were there. But here, Anabhisandhaya Phalam. So Kriyante Moksha Kangshi Bhi. So the Moksha Kangshi Bhi, they don't want the fruits of the work because they want Moksha. Whereas the Brahmavadis, they include the broad category of people who may not immediately want Moksha, but they want to be within the house of the scriptures. So Krishna is using the word, and so Tad. See, Om is just a general invocation. Tad is a more evolved conception. I was thinking about that absolute truth. Like Tat Tvam Asi. Tad also comes over there. Tad is general. Tad is referring to some other person. So we are focusing on the absolute truth a little bit more. Then after that, this next verse is a little unclear. Let's see what it means. Sadbhave sadhu bhave cha. Tadityetat prayujyate. Prashaste karmani tatha. Satchabda partha yujyate. Yagye tapasidane cha. Siti saditi chojyate. Karma chaiva tadarthiyam. Sadityeva bhidiyate. So, now Krishna in the second verse, Om Tat Sat. So, first verse was about Om, second was 24th was about Om, 25th was about Tat, and 26th about Sat. And then, towards the last verse, so 26, 27 talk about Sat, and then 27 is like a conclusion, and 28th is the conclusion of the whole chapter. 27th is the conclusion of the Om Tat Sat section. So, what is he telling over here? Sad bhave, sadhu bhave, cha. So, Sadbhava means actually in the nature of Om. Now Om Tat Sat. Sat is the word Sad is related with the word Sat. Sat is the eternal absolute truth. Sadbhave. So when one has the attraction to the absolute truth, one wants to attain the nature of the Supreme. So that is that Sadbhava, when one wants to attain, that is a sadhu bhava, that is auspicious. Sadbhave sadhu bhave cha. Sad ityat prayojyate. So when one has that auspicious emotion of wanting to attain the eternal nature, at that time one chants Sat. Prashaste karmani tatha. Sat shabda partha uchyate. So prashaste means in bona fide, in scripturally ordained. So when one does one's work and then utters Sat. So it's not just a matter of uttering Sat. Sat is the utterance of Sat is important, no doubt. But it is also the understanding and the purpose. The whole idea that one is trying to connect with the absolute truth, attain the eternal platform. So Prashyagyas, then he tells this that Satchabda Partha Yujyate. At that time they use the word Sat. And then he says, Yagya Tapasidana Cha. So again and again these three are coming, Yagya Dana Tapa. Because the whole idea was Yagya and Dana Tapa could be in the three modes. But we want to spiritualize them. So what was in the three modes was talked about earlier in the chapter. Now Om Tat Sat, the invocation of the Om Tat Sat and the conception underlying that invocation, both these will help to take these Yagyadana Tapa to a transcendental level. Yagyadana Tapa Sthiti Sat Iti Chojyate. So at that time when one, while doing Yagyadana Tapa, when one chants Sata, then by that whatever work one does, that will become spiritualized. So what Prabhupada says over there is, so, which true to the absolute nature are performed to please the Supreme Person. So, essentially, don't get too caught up in what Om means, Tat means, Sat means. You know, these are important terms in the Vedic context, but within the Vaishnava, the Gaudiya Vaishnava context, the focus is not on the literal recitation of the words, but it is on the essential principles and the emotions that are associated with them. So the whole idea is that whatever activities we are doing, we connect them with the absolute truth. So in a sense, this section is, if you had to talk about it in devotional terms, it would be something similar to what is talked about in 9.27. Yat karoshi lasnasi yat juho siddhadasiyat. Yat tapasasi kaunte yat kurushva madarpana. But here Krishna is not directly introducing himself. So he's talking about it himself in these generic terms of Om Tat Sat. And finally, in the end, Krishna will tell, if actually one doesn't have faith, then there is of no use. Then it will go all in vain. Ashraddhaya hutam dattam. Tapastaptam kutam chayat. Asadityuchyate partha. Nachatat pretyanoiha. So, ashraddhaya hutam dattam. So, chapter started with what? Yajante Shraddhayanvita. Ye Shastra Vidhi Mutrujya Yajante Shraddhayanvita. One has some Shraddha, but here Ashraddhaya Hutam Dattam. So if without Shraddha one does tapas taptam kritam chet. So here datta refers to giving in charity. Hutam refers to yagya. And tapa refers to tapa. Yagya dan tapa is what is being talked about over here again. So tapas taptam kritam chet. If one does these, but if one is not doing it shraddha, then it is asad ityuchyate partha. It is asad. And the result, pretya means after that. Where does the word pretya come in a well-known verse? Ishopanishad? Yes. Asuryana malate loka andhena tamasavrita tamste pretya bhigachanti yeke chatmahanojanha. So the pretya refers to the post-death stage. So actually after the soul leaves the body, then the soul gets a preta deha. A preta deha is a body that is grosser than the subtle body and subtler than the gross body. And that body is the transition by which the soul goes from this world to the next world. And when he goes, of course this is within the karmakanda context, and then when the last rites are performed, so on the 10th day when the fire, when the pindadan is done, at that time whatever food, this is the whole understanding in the Rigvedic, in the Vedic context. As devotees, we are not so much concerned about specifics. We are concerned about satisfying the, addressing the principles. But the specifics were what? That when the food offerings are done, so whatever food offering is done in the pindadan, that food, by a mystical process, that food contributes to the formation of the body of the person in the next life. So when the pindadan is completed, at the end of it, the preta becomes a pitra. That means the preta goes to the next life and he gets the next body over there. That was the idea. So pretya refers basically to after death. So one does not get any benefit after that, neither pretya, na iha, nor in this life. So that means Krishna is telling that if one doesn't follow, one doesn't have faith, then one will not get any benefit at all. So faith is essential, and faith can be within three modes, and it is best if one comes towards goodness and ultimately goes beyond goodness towards transcendence. So in this way, Arjuna's question is addressed by Krishna through a generic analysis of the three modes and the means to transcend the three modes. So at this point, the Arjuna will go back to the... Yes,
please. Previous verses, like, is it a progressive level of Ignantapa, Om Tat Sat?
Are Om Tat Sat progressive? Well, it is not that if you chant Sat, you will get more piety than Tat or Om. It's not like that. It's just like, the whole idea is that these are words which all three can be a phrase, which can refer to the absolute truth. But along with that, each of them can be used independently also. And when it is used independently, it has some specific meanings.
Krishna is referring to like, Om means, you said, they may want some fruity results.
Correct.
But Tat is referring to more specific.
Correct.
Means they don't want fruits.
Correct.
Means, like,
so what it means is that within the Vedic ritual context, the different... See, now in our case, how it works is that just like Dhruva Maharaj, when he could not remember what to pray to the Lord, he just started praying. He started chanting the holy names, and then he got the buddhi, and then he was, the conscious put, and then he could utter eloquent prayers. No. Dhruva Maharaj, when he saw the Vishnudutas, when the Vishnudutas came to take him back to the spiritual world, actually he just didn't know what to do. So he offered obeisance, he didn't know what prayers to offer, so it is said that he started chanting the holy names at that time. So Prabhupada says that, you know, devotees can chant the holy names at all times. That is fine. But still within deity worship also we have specific mantras which you can chant at specific times. So, within the Vedic context, Om, Tat, Sat are words which were used for specific purposes. And Krishna is basically telling what were the purposes for which those words were used. And cumulatively he is saying that all these three separate words as well as a three word compound, both of those are used ultimately to spiritualize our material activities. Clear? So, yeah. Okay, what is the significance in the Shraddha of the crows coming? See, the whole idea is that the whenever certain rituals are performed, especially which are involving, invoking, which are meant to satisfy some higher beings, or which are connected with some higher principles, then there is some way in which the Lord or the higher beings reciprocate. So the specific crow coming is not important, the specific crow coming, but the idea is that actually the higher powers that are there in the universe, ultimately the Supreme Lord, when the sacrifice is performed properly, when the yagya is, whatever, pindadan is done, then when a crow comes and takes, the idea is that that is a way, it's indicated that now the sacrifice is completed. So the underlying principle is that the super soul is there in the heart of all living beings, and a super soul guides a crow to come over there. So that is a way by which it's indicated that this yagya has now been completed. Clear? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Pooji, now we are discussing about this karma kanda. So, but devotee don't follow the karma kanda. So he's more involved in the practical devotional service like chanting and all. So for what is the importance of this karma kanda in devotee's life? Whether they should follow or not follow?
What is the importance of karma kanda in devotee's life? In general, brahmacharis, not at all. Grahasthas, there are some karmakandi samskaras. Actually, the samskaras are broad principles. They are not necessarily karmakandi. But the samskaras can be spiritualized. And they can be followed. So Prabhupada, of course, would talk about Karbhadan samskar. Then there is the Vivaha samskar. But there are various samskaras like that. In fact, there is a whole book of samskara that has been published by the GBC Press. I think Bhanu Maharaj and Bhakti Dhyapurna Maharaj, some other devotees have come together and written that book. And that is all meant to create devotional impressions in people's lives. So, the samskara that are given, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, in his, what is the book? Shatkriya Dipika? Satsar Dipika. There he describes, how many of these karmakandi rituals can be made devotional, can be spiritualized basically. So, during Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur's times, he was the first person who started sort of institutionally cultivating people. So many of the grahasthas, they were, most of his followers were Indians. And they had to, they were practicing Vaishnavas, but they were in broad Indian culture. So Indian culture involved doing a lot of karmakandi activities also. So then they would go and do karmakandi activities with the karmakandi Brahmins. And those karmakandi Brahmins would often give conceptions which were quite erroneous from the transcendental perspective. So then at that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said that even devotees, now after a lot of discussion, said that devotees should learn some of the karmakandi rituals so that they can do it in a devotional way. That's why we have, some, now when we have the Vivaha Yajna also, we have some devotee priests who do the Vivaha. Like that, the various yajnas can be done by devotees. So that way, we have been given guidance in our sampradaya about which of the rituals that are there in the broader culture, they can be adopted. Okay. Yes, Amal Mahaprabhu.
In our tradition, like Upnayanam is given by the spiritual master, actually, not supposed to be taken by somebody like other Karmakandi Brahmanas and all which are there. So now many others, they will consider this as very, very important. But what specifically devotees should do as Grahasthas, I'm asking. Upnayanam ceremony.
So Grahasthas?
That is a Diksha which we associate.
So should
with.
They? Means, are you saying that if they are in a family where they get Upnayan from a Kula Guru, should they take it or not?
Yes.
Generally speaking, there is no strict rule about this. There is, as long as it is, does not involve some long-term commitment in terms of, say, worshipping some demigod or doing some rituals which are not in agreement with devotional principles, one doesn't have to necessarily disturb the faith of others. That principle is in 3.26. So, it is not necessary also absolutely, like I know some devotees, they were Brahmin families born earlier and they were wearing sacred thread. And then they became devotees and they realized that, okay, now actually this is not proper. So they actually took out the sacred thread. And then whether that is essential, well, we'll have to see anukula sankalpa pratikula savarjanam. It's not absolutely essential that it has to be renounced. The important point is that we should practice the core principles of bhakti. So I will say that it has been decided upon time, place, circumstance. It's not an absolute principle that, because most initiations nowadays are quite nominal, in the sense that there is no commitment made at that time and no long-term relationship formed. So that way, if you see, Prabhupada's father was a Vaishnava, and still Prabhupada, Gaurmohan, they got Prabhupada initiated by some guru. And Prabhupada said that, you know, that did not have any effect on me at all. So the point is that Prabhupada was a Vaishnava since childhood, still he had some initiation. It's not that he opposed it or didn't do it, but it, neither was it that it had a big transformational effect on it. So whether we should specifically reject any of these things, that will vary. Especially if it involves something which are non-devotional or anti-devotional, then we have to be careful about those things.
Brahman Guru, specifically now as we have in ISKCON, what I had heard that if a person is having already a Brahman Guru, that means the Upanayana ceremony, and if that person is not an atheist and not a Mayavadi, which means in the Vedic fold, not exactly out Mayavadi, then what I had heard that the ISKCON will discontinue giving them the Brahmana because they already have a Guru, Brahman Guru, who is eligible to teach the Vedic scriptures, because Brahman initiation is actually meant for proximity to deities and scripture, basically. So that's what I had heard. So is that correct? That's why I was asking, because then that would mean to say that we are taking such a step which is detrimental in one sense. This, as far as I know, that Shivram Swami Maharaj's book, he writes this. Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru.
Yeah. So, if somebody has already got Brahman initiation from a person who is not directly atheistic, then is it that the person doesn't need to take Brahman Diksha with ISKCON or shouldn't take? There is, as of now, no uniform understanding on this. The whole concept of Guru is a complex issue. And then even the concept of initiation, you know, previously in our sampradaya, the primary initiation was the Brahman initiation. Now, from Prabhupada's time, actually the Harinam initiation has been very much emphasized. Anyway, what has been emphasized is not important. The principle is important. It's connecting with the Guru. So, generally speaking, Jiva Goswami, now Shri Maharaj's book, it's well researched, but that is not the ISKCON's official position. The Guru issue is quite complex, and that is, he can base his position on certain scriptures, but that's his position. So, the general, what Jiva Goswami Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is two things. That if one has been already initiated by a Guru, who is a Vaishnava in proper standing, then one doesn't have to take reinitiation. On the other hand, he says if one has taken initiation from Mayavadi or a Karmakandi, then one needs to take initiation from a Guru, Vaishnava Guru. So, there is no specific differentiation between Harinam and Brahman Diksha. Generally speaking, the whole purpose of Diksha is eventually to get Shiksha. So, we have to connect with our spiritual master, in Parampara in a proper way. Now, the specifics will vary according to time, place, circumstance. I wouldn't make any authoritative statement, because as of now, I don't see any authoritative statement directly being implemented. So this will vary.
Why should one unnecessarily do this step? It is a, you said no, you know, uniformity on this. Then as among ISKCON grahasthas, brahmacharis anyway they won't do. So among grahasthas, why we can't tell them that this is not required for them? Or because they are anyway, if the devotees, children are going to grow, then they will get a Brahman Guru also in future. Specifically for devotees I am asking, not for outsiders.
See, whether for devotees what should be done, ultimately in the Mahabharata Krishna says, Nahi sarvatra vidhiyate. Nahi sarvatra vidhiyate. There is not a rule for everything. The context Krishna is telling Arjuna is that there are times when you have to use your intelligence to decide things. It is not a rule for everything. Nahi sarvatra vidhiyate. The scriptures give us broad principles, but you cannot just legislate everything in life. So these are issues which actually have to be decided on time, place, circumstance. I would say that the broad principle is, generally devotees complete the whole process of initiation within ISKCON. But if some devotees have some reservations, others should not make them feel uncomfortable. The whole process of initiation is based on individual inspiration. So, if somebody feels uncomfortable, uninspired about taking a particular step, we should not force them to take it. But at the same time, if somebody feels inspired to do it, we should not stop them. So, that's why it will vary according to time, place, circumstance. It's a little difficult. I wouldn't like to make anything statement like that. In general, I have seen that most devotees take both initiations. But Prabhupada also said that there is Harinam that takes us back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that the second and third dikshas are not essential for going back to Godhead. So one can go back to Godhead just with first initiation. So third initiation is of course sannyas. So we don't need second and third initiations for going back to Godhead. So in that sense, second initiation is not essential. So it's not that if a person doesn't take second initiation, his initiation process is incomplete. Already initiated, already connected with Sampradaya, and is well situated on the path back to Godhead. So if the person feels that already I have taken second initiation from elsewhere, let's go to them, then it's okay. Okay, last two questions, then we'll stop. Okay, Andrew.
Changed the whole Brahman being the primary one. He changed in ISKCON as Harinam as the primary one. The one thing. And second thing is initiation itself, Proji. How it is different from means in organizational way initiation is different from other ways initiation. Means in a karmakandic way or
so how is how did Prabhupada change the initiation?
It's a huge topic.
Where is it? Okay. I have a whole seminar on this. So, okay, I'll just take one part of it here quickly. So, basically, is initiation in general has five parts. It's called as Panch Samskara. Tapaha Pundram Tatha Namo Mantra Yajnasch Panchama. Amihiche pancha samskara paramaikantiki hetavaha. So these are, there is cause of paramaikantiki hetavaha, this cause for devotion. So tapaha, pundra, nama, mantra and yajna. So pundra is the tilak that we use. So nama refers to, we can just go ahead here, tapa refers to actually the principle of performing austerity. So in our case it's four regulatory principles. Pundra is the applying tilak, nama is the harinam that we get. Mantra actually refers to the Gayatri Mantra. And Yaja is deity worship. So basically these five components together comprise the process of initiation. This is from the Pancharatras basically. This verse and these five principles. So now these five have to be administered. How they will be administered, that will vary according to person, tradition to tradition, guru to guru. That will vary. The Pancha Samskara is important. So the way we have it in ISKCON and the Gaudiya tradition was that all Vaishnavas, if they are practicing Vaishnava, they can wear tilak. So pundra starts away. Tapaha, we start following the four regulatory principles as much as we can. And then as they become serious, they want to be committed, then follow it seriously. So tapaha, pundra, there is no specific ritual for starting that. Then nama, we start chanting, but we get it at the time of first initiation. And then mantra and yaja, that starts at the second initiation. So now these five, they may be given over a period of time, like, but for Prabhupada, like all five were almost, most of the second initiation was given together. That was the exception, but Bhaktivedanta Thakur would do that. So, in Kali Yuga, the holy name is the most important because it's the Yuga Dharma. So Prabhupada emphasized that. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur did not de-emphasize the holy name, he also emphasized it. But the point was, he was living in a setting that was primarily within India, within the Vedic culture. And within that Vedic culture, it is the Brahman Diksha that is considered to be primary Diksha. And he went along with that tradition. So, eventually, it is not that Brahman Diksha involves some additional vows about additional sadhana. The main thing is the sadhana is what we talk about at Harinam Diksha itself. So, in that sense, what Prabhupada did was just a shift of emphasis. But the essence remained the same. Is it clear? So, and what was the second question? Okay, how is it different traditions? Basically, these five should be done. Now, how they will be done, that will vary. You know, some institutions have anything which almost borders on the frivolous. You know, just have the Charanamrita, the Guru thrown on people, and whoever gets a drop, they are initiated. Now, that is really making initiation too cheap. There are others who have a little bit of rituals and some formalities there, but there is no commitment over there. So, you know, in Hindi they say, maine bhi guru kiya hai. But actually, the whole process is, guru karna nahi hai, shishya banna hai. So, Prabhupada, guru karna hai, then Prabhupada said, this is my dog, this is my grandfather, this is my pop, this is my favorite film star, and this is my guru. You know, it's like just a fashion or a trend. It's not like that. So, actually, you have to become disciples. So generally, the whole process of initiation is to formalize our commitment to the spiritual master and to the process of devotional service. But the essence is the commitment, but there is a formalized occasion where we formalize that commitment. Okay. Yes, bro, last question. Oh. Brahmachari should not follow karmakanda rituals. That I am basically referring to samskaras. The various samskaras that are there, that there is no need to follow. But there are certain things, just like we follow whatever is in the Vaishnava calendar. So, generally speaking, the eclipses are also, they are significant things. So, see, how do we divide what is karmakanda and what is bhakti? It's whatever acharyas have given us. So Ekadashi, especially, Ekadashi can be a very much Karmakandi ritual. But Ekadashi can be followed from Bhakti perspective also. So when we follow the solar eclipse, lunar eclipse also, what are the things that we do? We are not doing anything to, you know, counter the influence of Rahu Ketu at a Karmakandi level. What are we doing is essentially increasing our devotional service. But to focus on the core activities of devotional service. So in that sense, the occasion is just a spur for us to intensify our devotional service. So the karma, so the solar lunar eclipse, devotees are not are fearful of the material inauspiciousness that it can come, but we are concerned with increasing our devotion and we use it for that purposes. So it's not necessarily anything contrary, just like astrology. Generally devotees don't have to refer to astrology, but it's not wrong. If some devotees feel that that's what they want to do, they can do it. In marriage bureau when they have that, then they leave up to the boy and the girl whether they want to get the horoscope smashed or not. Most of them may want, some of them may not want. That's up to them. So there are some things which are left optional. Some are karmakanda rituals or some occasions which are of significance. That significance is basically something which is related with the universe, happenings in the universe. That significance can be addressed at a karmakanda level or it can be addressed at a bhakti level. So we are taking the events that are significant at the cosmic level and we are addressing them at a bhakti level. So Ekadashi is a day which is pleasing to Lord Vishnu. It also has material benefits. So it's a significant day, but rather than focusing it on the material level, we are focusing it at a transcendental level. Okay? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Itai Gaur Premanandi.